are still in our study of Bible doctrine. We have come to the last subject of that study, which is eschatology, of last things, of what the Bible says about the future, the end of the age, and so on. So we are at message number 69 in this series. The title of this morning's message is The Story of the Heavens. We're going to be looking at Genesis chapter 1, verses 14 to 19. And God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth." And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. And God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good, and the evening and the morning were the fourth day. Venus is the closest planetary neighbor to Earth. At least NASA says that it is, and I think that is particularly if you are considering the closest approach to the Earth of the planets. There are some physicists that contend that certain calculations over time show Mercury to be the closest to the Earth on average, but the closest approach that the planets get to the Earth is indeed Venus. Venus has more similarities to the Earth than any of the other planets of the solar system. So it's closer to the Earth in terms of its size, in terms of its mass, and in terms of its density. But despite those similarities, Venus is inhospitable and hostile to human life. It is closer to the sun than the Earth, and so it has a surface temperature of around 900 degrees Fahrenheit, and that is hot enough to melt lead. Its surface is a rust-collared, barren hardscape consisting of mountains and volcanoes. The atmospheric pressure on the surface of Venus is similar to being a few thousand feet below the ocean on the Earth. And in fact, these the pressure and the heat has made it pretty much impossible. There has been some craft that has landed their probes and such, but they have not lasted very long on the surface of Venus. The planet Venus also features high levels of carbon dioxide and atmospheric sulfuric acid, so again, very inhospitable to life. So close to the Earth, in fact, it's considered a twin planet to the Earth in many ways, but nevertheless, very inhospitable. But did you know that Venus is mentioned in the Bible? Now, it's not mentioned by that name, but it is referred to when the Bible speaks about the bright morning star in Revelation 22:16, or the day star in 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse number 19. Morning stars are bright celestial bodies that can be seen in connection with dawn or the rising of the sun on the earth. So the brightest morning star is, in fact, the planet Venus that sometimes can be seen in the sky prior to the rising of the sun. So it's what the watchmen were watching for in that last watch of the night. They're looking for the appearance of the bright morning star because that signaled the coming of the day. They knew that the sunrise was soon to follow once that star was spotted. Well, Venus, it is a part of the universe. It's a part of the creations, a part of the, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Now, the creation is broadly divided into those categories, the heaven or heavens and the earth. And Venus is a part of the heavens. So Venus is a part of the biblical story of the heavens, and that's what we are considering in this message. Now, in the last message, we began looking at the threads of the big story of the Bible, and we were looking at the story of God. So these threads are the beings or entities that are present in the Bible's beginning and also ending. And we identified five main threads that are each made up of different strands, that being God, the heavens, spirit beings, the earth, and mankind. These are the five main threads of the Bible's storyline that begins in Genesis in the early books of the Bible and is there at the end of Revelation. And so we arrived at this statement of the big story of the Bible. The Bible's big story is the story of God, the heavens, angels, demons, the earth's land and sea, the plants and animals, and the nations of men on the earth, and how the connections, conditions, and relationships between them all change from creation to new creation. So God is the creator of all creation. And so he is separate. He is distinct from all creation. However, he was present at the beginning and will be present at the ending. And between the beginning and the ending, we have in the Bible the account of what God is doing from one to the other. So we arrived at this statement concerning the story of God in the Bible. The story of God is the record of how God created everything to display the full range of his attributes from wrath to mercy, and to reconcile and redeem his creation from the curse of sin so that he might dwell with his redeemed people on the renewed earth for eternity. So in this message, we want to take up another thread of this story, and that is the story of the heavens. And by saying the story of the heavens, I mean what the Bible reveals about the beginning, middle, and end for the heavens that God created. Now, I have also put this in the form of questions that I'm trying to answer in this study of eschatology. What has happened, what is happening, and what will happen? And ultimately, those are what we are trying to answer as we go through this study of eschatology. What does the Bible teach? What is the Bible's answer that it gives us to those particular questions? So the thread, or the story thread of the heavens, also has multiple strands, as we've talked about with the others. And we're focusing in this message on the strand of the cosmos, what we would call the non-earth part of the creation, the heaven, where the sun and the moon and the stars, stellar space, whatever that we want to call it. So in this message, we want to consider two particular aspects of the story of the heavens. First of all, the origin and the function of the heavens. Now, that's going to take us into the past of what has happened, and it's going to take us into the present of what is happening. And then we want to look to the future, the destiny of the heavens. So what does the Bible say about the heavens, and what do we know about the heavens at the end of the Bible in the book of Revelation? So we want to begin here with the origin and the function of the heavens. So in the creation, and we begin here in Genesis 1:1, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. And sometimes heaven is referred to in the singular, sometimes it's referred to in the plural. But essentially what we're being told as we start working through Genesis chapter number 1 is that God created space. What we consider space, the universe that is beyond the atmosphere of this planet Earth that we have as home. God created space, and then he created within that space all of these things that are spoken about, these beings and entities that we read about in Genesis and on in the rest of the Bible. Now, space is also referred to as firmament here. You see that word firmament that appears here in chapter number 1. In verse number 8, in fact, the firmament is called heaven, and God called the firmament heaven. In some of the other translations, they translate that term as expanse, and that's what the word itself means, the expanse, and it's a description of space. It was always, it seemed to be always something so hard for me to wrap my mind around, particularly as I was younger, and you know, there's absolutely nothing, and God creates space. Like, you just think that God comes to this space and decides, I want something here. You know how you look at that spot in the corner of the living room, and you think, boy, that's awful barren. We need something there, so I'm going to decorate that or something. Well, but that's not how it goes. God creates space to begin with, and then he begins creating all these other parts of the earth included, but all of these non-earth parts of the cosmos. And so that is referred to as heaven or the firmament. Now, the creation of the heavens isn't given to us in near the detail as the creation of the earth. In fact, we were talking about Venus at the beginning of this sermon, but we don't have an account of the creation of Venus in the detail that we have an account of the creation of the earth, but yet it was created here in Genesis chapter number 1. We see the sun, moon, and stars referred to in verse number 16. God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. Now, when the Bible refers to the sun, obviously that is the sun, the center of our solar system that we know of as the sun. And when the Bible refers to the moon, it's referring to this earth's moon that we know of as the moon, and we see in the night sky. And when the Bible refers to stars, though, the word, as I understand the word itself, generally refers to shining or burning. And the term applied to all kinds of heavenly bodies, and they could be planets, they could be planetary moons, they could be stars more as we think of them today, they could be comets or meteors, and the word could be applied to essentially any sort of a bright heavenly body that might be able to be seen, as you say, in the night sky. Now, the creation purpose of the heavenly bodies is given to us here in verse number 14. God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. Now, of course, you notice as this description is given about these entities that are created in space, it's given relative to the earth. These heavenly bodies are made to be for signs and seasons and days and years on the earth, to provide light for the day, to define and to mark what is a day, and darkness at night, and so on. These are relative to the earth. So light and dark mark the day and the night, and the movement of the heavenly bodies, including that of the earth, affects the tides and the seasons of the earth. So these heavenly bodies that are around the earth and they're moving and oscillating and all the whatever the things are that they are doing, rotating and so on, they affect what happens on the earth. And in fact, 1 year is a full orbit of the sun for the earth. And of course, our days are marked that way, as well as our seasons and our years and so on. Now, he also said that they were created for signs in verse number 14. And a sign is something that has a particular application for the future, and we'll look at that in just a little bit. Space, as God has created it, and again, the word expanse, it's something that we can't tell the end of. So God is described as stretching out the heavens or stretching out space, something like a scroll or maybe a fabric or something. Isaiah 45, 12, I have made the earth and created man upon it. I, even my hands, have stretched out the heavens, and all their host have I commanded. Now, it wasn't that many centuries ago that the number of the stars was thought to be in the thousands, something that could be numbered in the thousands, something that could be calculated and figured by men. But of course, We continue to find more and more as our technology grows and advances and we're able to see farther than what we were before. We find that space continues to go. We've found billions upon billions of stars and other galaxies and all of these things that have been seen in space. If you've ever looked at any of those pictures from the Hubble telescope and things like that, they're just astounding to look at, just hard to even comprehend. So we haven't found an end to space, and we don't know the number of the stars. In fact, the Bible depicts the stars as being innumerable. They're just beyond our ability to count. In Genesis 15:5, when God was making a promise to Abraham, it says, "He brought him forth abroad and said, 'Look now toward heaven, and tell the stars if thou be able to number them.' And he said unto him, 'So shall thy seed be.'" We have another reference in Jeremiah chapter 33 and verse 22. "As the host of heaven cannot be numbered, neither the sand of the sea measured, so will I multiply the seed of David my servant and the Levites that minister unto me." So obviously the sand of the sea and the stars of the sky are being used here as a reference. And it's something that can't be numbered. We don't know the end of it. We don't know the extent of it. And so it is something that is so far beyond us. Well, the sun and the moon and the stars, they do have an ongoing function. So that would be more of their creation, their origin, and their creative purpose. And there is an ongoing function in the creation order. So God has created this universe to operate in a particular way. The sun and the moon and the stars in particular provide stability of seasons upon the earth. So in Genesis chapter number 8, this is after the flood had destroyed the face of the earth and all life upon the face of the earth except what was in the ark. And this is what we have in Genesis chapter 8, verses 20 to 22. "And Noah built an altar unto the Lord and took of every clean beast and of every clean fowl and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And the Lord smelled a sweet savor, and the Lord said in his heart, 'I will not again curse the ground any more for man's sake, for the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite any more every living thing as I have done. While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease.'" So this is part of what we would consider God's covenant with Noah, that he is going to stabilize the earth and the sun and the moon and the stars around the earth and their effect upon the earth. In other words, God is saying here that these heavenly bodies that are around the earth and that affect the earth so much in day and night, and all, these heavenly bodies are not going to destroy the earth. God is going to stabilize the earth for as long as it remains in his purpose to do so. So these signs, or rather these days and years and seasons and all of these things are going to continue, is what God is promising there. In Jeremiah chapter 31, verses 35 to 37, "Thus saith the Lord, which giveth the sun for a light by day, and the ordinances of the moon and of the stars for a light by night, which divideth the sea when the waves thereof roar. The Lord of hosts is his name. If those ordinances depart from before me, saith the Lord, then the seed of Israel also shall cease from being a nation before me forever. Thus saith the Lord, if heaven above can be measured and the foundations of the earth searched out beneath, I will cast off all the seed of Israel for all that they have done, saith the Lord." You go on to Jeremiah chapter 33, verses 20 to 22. "Thus saith the Lord, if you can break my covenant of the day and my covenant of the night, that there should not be day and night in their season, then may also my covenant be broken with David my servant, that he should not have a son to reign upon his throne, and with the Levites, the priests, my ministers, as the host of heaven cannot be numbered, neither the sand of the sea measured, so will I multiply the seed of David my servant and the Levites that minister unto me." Now, we typically like to complain about the seasons. It gets cold, and then we complain about the cold, and then it gets hot, and we complain about the heat, and then we get rain, and we complain about the rain, and then it's dry, and we complain about it being dry. But what we are told here is that those are actually signs ongoing still today. The fact that the sun rises and we have day and we have night and we have seasons and we have years and we have seed time and we have harvest and we have all of these things. These are actually signs to us that God's promises will not fail. That's what the prophet Jeremiah is saying to the people. Because why? Because they're going to be destroyed. They're going to be carried away. They're going to be scattered across the land. They're going to be under God's judgment. But his promises to David and to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob before him are not going to fail. Why? Because there's still a sun. There's still a moon. There's still springtime. There's still summer. There's still fall. There's still winter. All of these things are still going. And that's what God says is a sign to them as well as to us that his promises will not fail. So that stability provides for our daily life and for our sustenance. And in fact, through it, God feeds us and gives us the things that we need to live. That stability provides for navigation as well, that has long used the stars and such and their positions to be able to navigate across the earth. But the sun and the moon and the stars, these heavenly bodies, also glorify God through witness of him as a creator. So Psalm 19, verses 1 to 6. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line is gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them hath he set a tabernacle for the sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, and rejoiceth as a strong man to run a race. His going forth is from the end of the heaven, and his circuit unto the ends of it, and there's nothing hid from the heat thereof. So the psalmist here is saying that the sun and the moon and the stars, the heavens above us, that are obvious wherever we are on the earth, are testifying of the glory of God as creator. The heavens are also there to humble us as human beings. In Psalm 8, verses 1 to 4, O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is thy name in all the earth, who has set thy glory above the heavens. Out of the mouth of babes and sucklings hast thou ordained strength because of thine enemies, that thou mightest steal the enemy and the avenger. When I consider the heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him? The vastness of space, the innumerable host of heavenly bodies, is still yet less than God. As big as space is, and we don't know how big it is because we don't know the ends and extents of it. We don't know the number of the stars and the heavenly bodies that exist in space. And yet God is greater than them all. And you notice as the expression is given in Psalm 8, this is the work of his fingers. The work of fingers refers to tiny precision work. This is the work of God's fingers. How great must God be? How small must we be when we consider the heavens? Now, the stability and the consistency of the heavens can lead not only to complaining, but it can also lead to complacency, and it can also lead to unbelief on the part of man. This is what Peter warned about in 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 to 7. The second epistle, beloved, I now write unto you, in both which I stir up your pure minds by way of remembrance, that you may be mindful of the words which were spoken before by the holy prophets and of the commandment of us, the apostles of the Lord and Savior, knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers walking after their own lusts and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation. Notice Peter's explanation. For this they willingly are ignorant of, that by the word of God the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of the water and in the water, whereby the world that then was, being overflowed with water, perished. In other words, there's already been a significant change, and that came at the flood. But the heavens and the earth, which are now, Peter says, by the same word are kept in store, reserved unto fire against the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. In other words, Peter's saying things have not always been as they are now. And that also brings us then to consider the destiny of the heavens. That the heavens would be for signs is what God said in Genesis 1:14. And that points at least partially to the fact that the heavens will be for signs in the end times. Now, a sign has to be something that is distinguishable in order to be a sign. And that's what we find with the heavens in the end times. We find things not continuing as they always have, but there's starting to be a difference even in the universe beyond Earth's atmosphere. It seems that we can expect the stability of the heavens to continue until this future event that is referred to as the Day of the Lord, where we have the most significant mention of signs in the heavens, and these signs are those that immediately precede that coming day. Well, the Day of the Lord especially speaks of the special time of future judgment that will occur at the end of the tribulation, or Daniel's 70th week, and it will occur at the end of the millennium, though we have much more about that day in terms of at the end of Daniel's 70th week. So the Day of the Lord was prophesied. So we look at just a couple of examples. Joel chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. Blow ye the trumpet in Zion, and sound an alarm in my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Lord cometh, for it is nigh at hand. A day of darkness and of gloominess, a day of clouds and of thick darkness as the morning spread upon the mountains, a great people and a strong. There hath not been ever the like, neither shall there be any more after it, even to the years of many generations. This coming day of the Lord that is prophesied is a time that is said specifically will be unlike any other time in Earth's history. And one of those reasons why will be the signs of the heavens that immediately precede that day. So you go on down in Joel 2 to verses 30 to 32. The Lord says, I will show wonders in the heavens and in the earth, blood and fire and pillars of smoke. The sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the great and terrible day of the Lord come. And it shall come to pass that whosoever shall call on the name of the Lord shall be delivered. For in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem shall be deliverance, as the Lord hath said, and in the remnant whom the Lord shall call. Now we are told that these things will happen when the nations begin to gather against Jerusalem during that time. Joel chapter 3, verses 9 to 16. Proclaim ye this among the Gentiles. Prepare war. Wake up the mighty men. Let all the men of war draw near. Let them come up. Beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. Assemble yourselves and come, all ye heathen, and gather yourselves together round about. Thither calls thy mighty ones to come down, O Lord. Let the heathen be wakened and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there will I sit to judge all the heathen round about. Put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, get you down, for the press is full and the fats overflow, for their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. The sun and the moon shall be darkened, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. The Lord also shall roar out of Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the heavens and the earth shall shake. But the Lord will be the hope of his people and the strength of the children of Israel. Isaiah prophesies of this time as well in Isaiah chapter 13, verses 9 to 11. Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, cruel both with wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he shall destroy the sinners thereof out of it. For the stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light, The sun shall be darkened in his going forth, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine. And I will punish the world for their evil, and the wicked for their iniquity. And I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease, and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible." This is the same time that Jesus spoke of on the Mount of Olives in Matthew chapter 24, verses 29 to 30. Immediately after the tribulation of those days. Now that tribulation of those days is that first half of that 7-year period. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. We also see this being played out in the tribulation in the book of Revelation, chapter number 6, verses 12 to 17. "And I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood. And the stars of heaven fell unto the earth, even as a fig tree casteth her untimely figs when she is shaken of a mighty wind. And the heaven departed as a scroll when it is rolled together. And every mountain and island were moved out of their places. And the kings of the earth and great men and the rich men and the chief captains and the mighty men and every bondman and every free man hid themselves in the dens and in the rocks of the mountains and said to the mountains and rocks, Fall on us and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand?" We see again here in Revelation chapter 8 and verse number 12. This is the trumpets. "And the fourth angel sounded, and a third part of the sun was smitten, and a third part of the moon, and a third part of the stars, so as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise." So this describes a time that is immediately preceding the day of the Lord, which is with the Lord's coming. You read about that in Revelation chapter number 19, also referred to as the Battle of Armageddon. So this is the Lord's coming, this day of the Lord, when he comes in his wrath to execute vengeance and to rid the earth of all sinners that are in it. So we're told that the heavens and the earth will be shaken. Violent convulsions taking place, not just up on the earth in that day, but also in the heavens. Again, the sun and the moon and the stars will not be as they have always been. The shaking of the heavens will not leave them unchanged. Peter says in 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse number 10, "But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. The earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up." And we read in Revelation 21 and verse number 1, "And I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea." And when it speaks of new heaven and new earth and the former heaven and earth being passed away, and Peter describes this fire and burning and speaks in terms of perishing. Now, there are some that take that to mean that there will be a complete obliteration of the current heavens and earth and a new creation out of nothing of heavens and earth. I don't believe that is the case. There's good reason to take this statement as pointing to a renewal. In fact, some of the language that Peter uses about the fire is also used to refer to that refining of metal. It's purifying. This earth's going to be purified. I mean, even Peter just before that said that the old earth was destroyed by the flood. But the earth wasn't obliterated, but it was changed by the judgment of the flood upon it. So I do believe there's good reason to believe that it is going to be the heaven and the earth, but they're going to be renewed. They're going to be restored. They're going to be purified. They're going to be renovated. Well, the inhabitants of the eternal ages, we are told, will not need the heavenly bodies like we need them and depend upon them now. Because God the Father and Jesus Christ will be with them with heaven come to the earth. So Revelation 21 and verse number 23, "And the city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon to shine in it, for the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof." And some have taken that to think, well, the sun and the moon are not going to exist anymore. It simply says they won't have need of the sun and moon. So whether they continue to exist, whether they are renewed, and I again believe that that would be good reason to believe that they are. But nevertheless, Isaiah prophesied of this time as well. Isaiah chapter 60, verses 19 to 20. "The sun shall be no more thy light by day, neither for brightness shall the moon give light unto thee. But the Lord shall be unto thee an everlasting light, and thy God thy glory. Thy sun shall no more go down, neither shall thy moon withdraw itself. For the Lord shall be thine everlasting light, and the days of thy mourning shall be ended." So as we look at those eternal ages in the future, there's not going to be day and night. There's not going to be seasons in the sense that we know them, even though the Bible does speak about the tree of life bearing fruit every month. But we don't, there's a lot of things we don't know about that time, but undoubtedly great changes have happened upon the earth, which we'll talk about in another message, but also in the heavens, as we consider the eternal ages. So what is the story of the heavens? The story of the heavens is the record of how space and all non-earth entities were created to display God's glory and provide stability to the earth, as well as give signs of His coming in judgment and to be renewed for eternity. And again, that is a time when we are told we won't be dependent on the sun and the moon and the stars the way we are dependent on them now and have been in our history. Why? Because God will be with us. We will be with Him. He will be our light and our brightness.